Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Beyond the Ribbon. My name is Ryan Parnell, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host and oncology nurse, Pam McMillan.
Hey Ryan, how are you today?
Pam, I'm good. I'm good. How about yourself?
I'm good. So when we see patients here at the center, what do you think the number one complaint or side effect from chemotherapy might be?
Well, there's no question, Pam. There's no question. I've heard it. You've heard it. We've heard it. They talk about it. The pain and tingling of peripheral neuropathy.
You know, I think that's the number one thing that I hear besides memory problems, joint problems. But, you know, oftentimes we hear, oh, well, I have neuropathy and we don't know what to do. Yeah. How can we help these patients? You know, I know that we have massage therapists here that has shown benefits for neuropathy. We have right. The water exercises that, you know, we have heard personally people say, I can actually feel my feet in the water. But, you know, I'm excited today to learn more about what is chemo-induced peripheral neuropathy. Is there any difference with just regular neuropathy?
Yeah. And this is one of those episodes, Pam, like we've talked about repeatedly, is we're going to go to someone to get the, you know, latest, the greatest, and provide tips and help, because they're, you know, hearing someone say, well, they, whoever they is, they said it might get better. They said it takes time. Well, we don't want you just to sit back and suffer. So that's why we're doing episodes like this. I love episodes like this because it brings a lot of hard-hitting good information to you. So you guys listening, strap in, maybe get a pen and paper and get ready. Right, Pam?
You know, and she just came back from some training from Houston.
That's right.
So, you know,
well, that's why I say
sure got some great information in the great state of Texas, right?
The latest and greatest for sure. There you go. We're super excited to have Stacy Weber joining us today. She's a board certified oncologic clinical specialist through ABPTS. She's a current member of APTA Oncology. She's completed oncology physical therapy residency in Metro Detroit. She is a certified oncology rehabilitation therapist. She's team lead in oncology therapy services at IU Health, which is Indiana, which had a great football season this year, by the way. And she clinically treats patients that have been impacted by all types of cancer and has time each week devoted to improving their oncology rehab program there that they have in Indiana. She's also had several publications, and it's kind of cool because, you know, she says, my other things I enjoy treating neuropathy and chemo-induced peripheral neuropathy. So, Pam, we've got the right person today. Dr. Weber, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on the podcast today. I'm here in Indianapolis, Indiana. And I'm excited to chat with you all, and also just really excited and thankful for your work as well and cancer survivorship and helping connect patients to services to help them feel better and live better.
Well, we are all about that, I can promise you. And the cool thing is I know that, you know, from someone like yourself who spends a lot of time working with folks and treating folks, I can't wait to learn from you, and I know our listeners will as well. And so, Pam, where would you like to start? We want to just talk about what is chemo.
I think we start with the basic. What is the nervous system?
Yeah. So I love to use visuals and stuff, so I'm sad we won't be able to share those. But our nervous system, we look at our brain as part of our central nervous system as well as the spinal cord. That's the central nervous system. And then our peripheral nervous system, we have the rest of the nerves that run throughout our arms into our fingertips and then all the way down the legs to the toes. So those are the main parts of our nervous system, and it's kind of where we divide things, our central nervous system and the peripheral nervous system. And we know for chemo-induced peripheral neuropathy, or CI, say that at all today, that is where people are impacted more in the peripheral nervous system that we see that.
So what is neuropathy?
So I also like to use to help patients understand the definitions that they have from the National Cancer Institute or the American Cancer Society, both of them have different definitions, but they kind of are very similar and summarize peripheral neuropathy as nerve damage that causes numbness, tingling, burning, pain, weakness, loss of ability to feel hot and cold temperatures, and sometimes even cramps in different parts of the body. It usually starts in the hands and feet and can be caused by injury, infection, disease such as cancer, sometimes diabetes, kidney failure, or poor nutrition, and then also sometimes by different medicines or different chemical agents like chemotherapy.
Pam, can't you just feel our listeners going, boy, does it.
Check pain, all those boxes.
Check the boxes, right? The painful feelings, the pins and needles. I even heard someone say once before, it's like having a rock in your shoe, you know, walking with a pebble or a stone in your shoe. What in the world, you know, so we're saying chemo-induced peripheral neuropathy, but it also happens in other ways as well, as you just said, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I will echo what you just said. Patients describe it. It's very unique to each patient how it feels, but I definitely see themes at the same time. I was just telling somebody this, where I've heard patients, just as you're saying, it feels like I'm walking on gravel or sandpaper, like a sandy feeling, sometimes a cotton feeling underneath the foot. Another thing patients will say a lot of times is it feels like my sock is bunched up in my shoe. They, whether or not it actually is, sometimes people feel that. And I've actually even had patients tell me it feels that way without anything on their foot. So there's some of these themes of patients feel things that aren't necessarily there, but it feels that way to them. And that's the way they describe it, is it's that sandy feeling or cotton or gravel that they're walking on. But it's really unique to each person. And when I see patients, I always tell them that this is your neuropathy that you're feeling. And sometimes other patients say it feels this way. A lot of patients will tend to say that it's not always pain, but it's more of just these altered sensations. Things feel funky. They don't feel the same as they did before treatment. So it can be described pretty differently, but also sometimes there are these similarities that patients will have similar ways that it feels to them in between different individuals.
You know, oftentimes I hear a lot of people complaining about sheets. Mm-hmm. They go to bed, the sheets touching their feet, causing the neuropathy to flare up. Is that a common thing that you see?
Yeah, I've heard that a lot as well. And as you were mentioning, I just went to our national PT conference, and we had, there's another clinician who does oncology rehab, and she's who I learned some of the treatment techniques that I use from a couple of years ago. She presented on CIPN, and then again this year had another presentation, and she described that as well, that patients often talk about the sheets feeling funny to them at nighttime, especially, and causing some discomfort that we would not expect normally for sheets running across somebody's feet to really cause that discomfort.
Is neuropathy more, symptoms more during the day or more in the evening or nighttime?
So it varies for each person, definitely. A lot of patients will have symptoms kind of throughout the day, but may have worse symptoms in the evening, kind of after they're done moving around for the day. It seems like a lot of times for people that they have worse symptoms in the evening. Not to say that they don't have them at all during the day, but sometimes they're worse after they've done their day of activities, and then they're kind of starting to rest for the evening and moving around less.
Which would make sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So I saw a statistic, and I think you even referenced this statistic once before in a presentation that we saw, that said somewhere between 50 to 90% of patients receiving chemo have signs and symptoms of the chemo-induced peripheral neuropathy. And of course, that's a wide range, right? And some of the people some people listening may say, well, I don't have chemo-induced neuropathy, but could I eventually get it? You know, I mean, is it something that there's like, once you've made it this far, you're okay? Or is it something that potentially they should be worried about if they did receive chemo, that they potentially could develop it later?
Yeah. So a lot of times patients may start to have issues with neuropathy even within the first month of having chemotherapy. They might not always develop it immediately after like that first cycle of chemotherapy, but they may have it come up a little bit later down the line, even within the year or so afterwards. And sometimes it can take a while to resolve, as you had mentioned, patients will say the they whoever it is telling them time will allow their symptoms to heal. But definitely people can have, they call it like a coasting effect, where it doesn't always show up immediately, but it might come up a little bit later. And we know for neuropathy as well that it's dose dependent for our patients. So it depends on how much of that dose of chemotherapy that they have, that we know there's certain types of chemotherapy that are more likely to cause neuropathy for patients. So it depends on if they have 12 cycles of this certain chemotherapy agent, they might have it, versus if they only had 4 cycles of a certain agent. There's different things that can kind of show that difference as well.
So what type of chemotherapy causes the peripheral neuropathy?
So we know there are a handful of them that they have studied and have good research evidence of. We know platinum-based drugs such as cisplatin, carboplatin, and oxaliplatin can cause CIPN. The taxane-based drugs, which are paclitaxel, doxitaxel, and abraxane. And then also some of the vinca alkaloids that are used, vincristine and vinblastine. Those are the more common chemotherapies that are likely to cause CIPN. But we know there's also some other infusions as well that might increase risk of CIPN. So the targeted therapy, Velcade, which is used often for multiple myeloma, may increase some of that CIPN symptoms for patients. And then also some immunotherapies for multiple myeloma, thalidomide, can potentially cause neuropathy. A lot of these are used a ton in our treatment for breast cancer, lung cancer, ovarian, colorectal, and GI, as well as testicular and blood cancers. A lot of these are those go-to first-line treatments typically for patients. So that's why we see it a ton. Mm-hmm. And with the statistic that you referenced, about 50 to 90% of patients, well, here's all these chemotherapies we're using, or the medical team is using regularly for cancer treatment for these common cancers as well. And I, on my presentation that I did before, I noted, I think sometimes the results that we see are the statistics that we see of how common is neuropathy vary some too, because sometimes patients don't report it or they don't know that's what they're experiencing necessarily. So that kind of helps us understand too. We know a lot of patients are getting these chemotherapies, and it's just helping patients even understand when I'm feeling this, is this maybe what's going on for me? So we could definitely see there might be 9 out of 10 rather than only 5 out of 10 people who are getting these chemotherapy drugs having neuropathy.
I'm sure just what you said right there makes perfect sense, because I'm sure if you're chemo naive, if you're cancer naive, and now you're into this world and you're getting this and you don't know, is this what it is? I'm feeling this differently, you know? And so I would imagine exactly what you said. I can totally see that, of not bringing it up to your physician, not bringing it up to maybe like your PT or someone that you're doing rehab with, or your nurse, navigator, or whoever. But I think it's important, right? The minute they start feeling these different symptoms and these different signs, it's important to bring that up.
Yeah, definitely. And that was the other point too, that I should have made earlier, that the earlier that we can try to work with patients, hopefully we can try to mitigate some of those symptoms or help them reduce those symptoms and make them not as uncomfortable. Like even just thinking about those sheets kind of rolling over somebody's feet and bothering them. Those are things we can hopefully try to make an impact on, so that a person's quality of life can be better as they're going through treatment, and also so that they don't have to have dose reductions of their chemotherapy, that we can try to help impact their changes that they're having from chemotherapy neuropathy earlier, so that they don't have to make those changes to their medical treatment plan as well.
You know, for those that are listening, thinking, man, I should have told my doctor, but I didn't. So now I have neuropathy. What are my odds of getting rid of the neuropathy?
So I wish I had a crystal ball to tell that even to some of the patients that I've seen. But I've seen patients who've been outside of their active treatment, so even a couple of years after treatment, that have come in and have had improvement. It really is. It depends on each individual as far as what are their other past medical history or other health conditions going on. Something that we should mention is diabetes can cause neuropathy as well. And patients that have diabetes before chemo-induced peripheral neuropathy could have worse neuropathy because of that. So that's its own thing as well. But a lot of the education and training that I've gotten too is actually taken from some of the research for diabetes neuropathy to try to apply that to the chemo-induced peripheral neuropathy. So it's hard to say for timeline-wise for patients, but we can still try to work on stuff and hopefully have improvement. And I've definitely seen patients who've had neuropathy from some time ago that does improve some and help them be able to feel more comfortable and even more confident. I had a patient who had treatment a couple years ago and was coming to me, and she's like, I can walk on the floor without shoes now. I can walk barefoot. And I wasn't able to do that before I started seeing you. So those are some cases that we get to see. And it's fun when we get to see those improvements like that too for patients. Yeah.
So for those survivors listening, there is hope. Yes. You know, make sure that you communicate this with your doctor that you are having these feelings. What kind of symptoms would indicate that they do have chemo-induced peripheral neuropathy?
Yeah. So
questions to ask yourself.
Yes, yes. So of course we want to know, are they on one of those types of medications that I mentioned earlier, any of those platinum drugs, taxanes, vinca alkaloids, or some of the other medications that we discussed? Those are really one of the things that will first point us to it. But then also patients can ask themselves some different questions related to what are they feeling. So some of the things that I will have patients tell me about is if they feel like they're having weakness in their hands or feet. Are they having trouble getting up and down from a seated position? Are they having any issue trying to use small items like putting in earrings, trying to use buttons on their shirts or fastening anything like that, tiny or small items? Are they having changes at all with their handwriting or typing? Do they feel like they're making more errors typing than they used to? Do they feel unsteady or more clumsy when they're walking around in their home or out in the community? Do they feel like they're tripping at all? And then also, do they have those kind of painful feelings? Is there numbness to them or a tingling or pins and needles sensation? And then also, are they having any trouble feeling if the temperature of an item, is it hot or is it cold, or can they not really tell? So those are some things for sure that patients could ask themselves and kind of be thinking about, do I have any of these issues? This might be something that could be chemo-induced peripheral neuropathy.
And I guess too, so the next step, so if I am feeling like what you just said is me, I need to go to my doctor. And is there something, how are they going to like diagnose me? Other than saying, well, yes, you've had these chemos, you've got this. Is there a test? Is there some guidance so that they can, you know, say, yes, absolutely, this is what you've got?
Yeah. Well, it depends on the doctor or the provider that the patient's seeing. Sometimes they might do some sensation testing with the patient, potentially. It could also be performed by a rehab clinician, a physical therapist or occupational therapist, if the patient's been referred to rehab. But we might try to look at using special little testing tools called monofilament to see if the patient can touch or if the patient can feel this light sensation on different spots on their hands or feet on the soles of each of those areas or the palm as well, kind of with eyes closed. So to see if the patient can detect that without actually seeing it. They may also do some reflex testing. So if you kind of have the classic example of somebody sitting on a treatment table and they're using the reflex hammer to test the reflexes as well, because that could potentially be impacted. And then also, of course, they might ask you to get up and move around and see how you're doing moving around, seeing if there's any weakness in any different areas. or kind of testing balance as well. So these are some of those different clinical testing assessment things that we can do, and looking at how also is the patient describing what do they feel and how are things progressing potentially since they've had treatment.
So now that it's been diagnosed, is the first treatment a medication?
Again, it kind of depends on the provider and what the patient is telling them. Some of the providers may prescribe medications such as duloxetine, also known as Cymbalta, as a medication that can help with pain relief for patients. Some other providers may also prescribe gabapentin is another common one that I've heard lots of patients had. Both of these medications are not necessarily utilized for like curative intent of neuropathy, but more so to help with pain relief and discomfort. And they're from the evidence that we do have, there is some limited support for the use of duloxetine or Cymbalta that can help with potentially giving a little bit of relief to patients. But it always is a mixed bag for patients. Some patients do better with it. Some patients, different medications don't react well with how they're feeling anyways. So that's an option, but we can also try lots of things that are not medicine or like medication based.
Is there any vitamins proven to help with neuropathy?
That is a good question, and I do not actually know. As a PT, I wouldn't prescribe any supplements or medications, but some doctors may also do some testing to see if there's any lab values that could also be causing some issues for patients. So that might be another thing they do when they're doing some workup for patients as well that are having changes with their sensation or weakness too, to see if they need to suggest anything like that.
So as a PT, Pam, I feel like we're fixing to head down the road that we know best.
Yeah.
Survivorship Center. I'm not a PT. Pam's not a PT, but talk to us about what it is that you guys in physical therapy, occupational therapy, and in your clinical rehab setting, what it is that you would do to help folks with their peripheral neuropathy?
Yeah. So I am in the outpatient rehab setting. I should say that as well. And I'm lucky and I get to work with a team of other physical therapists and occupational therapists at my same clinic, but at a couple other locations too, that we get to treat some of these patients. So for the physical therapy treatment, the interventions that I would use with patients would include manual therapy. So doing some hands-on work with patients, trying some different things to kind of calm down or desensitize that area that's hypersensitive. So thinking again of like the bed sheets, that's kind of a hypersensitive reaction that people have where they wouldn't normally have that reaction that bothers them to have sheets come over their feet. So talking about trying to desensitize the nervous system a little bit, some strengthening exercises to help improve that weakness that is very common with neuropathy. Working on some balance activities in the clinic with patients. And then, of course, education. For each person, it's going to be a little different, and we're going to have a unique treatment plan for them. As I discussed, neuropathy is really unique to each person, and it's really dose-dependent too. So depending on how many cycles of that chemotherapy that they had that has those neuropathy side effects, as well as we talked about some of their other past medical history, could impact things too. And then also just knowing a little bit about each person, what were they doing before their treatment? Were they pretty active? Were they a little more sedentary? Was their job very active? Kind of thinking of some of those things may also impact what we work on with people and what's most important to somebody, as well as what are their goals for things to get back to. There could be somebody who's interested in getting back to running. They used to be a marathon runner or some other distance endurance runner, or somebody maybe who was doing some different kind of weightlifting and things that they're interested in getting back to, but they're having trouble because of their neuropathy and feeling where they are kind of in space when they're standing or when they're running, and maybe wanting to improve their confidence for that too. We might see as well some people who are mostly staying around home and maybe just concerned about being able to play with their grandkids or enjoy different family outings and social gatherings as well. So it kind of depends a little bit what are the goals for the patient, but we're going to try to help calm down the nerves in the body to try to get rid of some of that discomfort with the tingling, and hopefully make an impact on how that's feeling in their hands and feet. And it depends on the setting as well for when it's OT and PT. The clinic that I work in right now, there's myself and another therapist who are kind of oncology rehab focused. And then we have an occupational therapy hand clinic that's over a little bit away from where we are. And we will sometimes refer patients there specifically too, to have more of that hand focus. It's a hand clinic that we have that can treat patients, and they're certified hand therapists, and they have a lot of specialized tools and stuff to also use with patients. But it's nice too when we can both work with patients, because we can kind of divide and conquer a little bit more. For instance, I recently evaluated a patient who's having neuropathy after having several doses of oxaliplatin. And she's having a lot of like cramps from her neuropathy in her legs, feeling weakness, and then numbness as well. But then she's also having that in the arms and hands. So we're going to try to tag team and have OT work with her, and then myself work with her too. And I'm going to address more balance in the lower body, and then have our OTs also help with some of the more fine motor skills like handwriting, opening small items like I discussed. And then trying to, like I said, make an impact, hopefully, so she can have some more relief. She was really having a lot of muscle spasms and cramps that were bothering her. So that will be one of our goals, to try to get rid of that. Cause that's one of the things that's important to her, and to be able to do her job more easily and feel like she can use a keyboard and move around, walk up and down the stairs easy without feeling, like she's stumbling or tripping on the stairs.
So is there a difference between physical therapy, massage hand massages, or going to a massage therapist to get a hand massage?
Yeah. So for physical therapy, we our kind of term that we use a lot, we'll say that we're doing manual therapy with patients, and that's often a treatment intervention that we'll use with patients for all kinds of stuff. So potentially for pain relief, for helping like desensitize those areas that are irritated as well. So that's one of the things that we use in the multiple options of our interventions and treatments with patients. It is different from massage therapy, because there's a massage therapist who has been trained in a different way, and focuses mostly on that. Whereas in physical therapy, we're also going to focus on potentially doing some strength training, improving balance, doing other activities to kind of help patients improve their daily function. I'm not educated as a massage therapist, so I'm not as familiar with all the training that they do, but I know we also have there's specific, sometimes oncology trained massage therapists too, which will also help patients do some treatment too for peripheral neuropathy and specifically for chemotherapy neuropathy. So those are also some awesome people to have on our team to help, because it can take time to work on all of these different things for patients and again, see what works best for them, what helps their symptoms the most. And it can be helpful to have a group of individuals working with a patient to try to have an impact on their neuropathy symptoms.
So here's what I'm hearing, Pam, Dr. Weber, tell me this. A lot of it is, what do you want to get back to doing, you know, as a patient? And maybe, just maybe, when you talk to your doctor, they can ask, right, to see a physical therapist. I know Here in our hometown, we have PTs that work with oncology patients and survivors. So it is okay to ask to maybe be seen by someone who can, you know, as you're talking about, just really diving in and focusing on those specific things you're having problems with, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And we're fortunate. We actually have people can go online and search. I'm going to double check that I have it right. Oncologypt.org is our National Physical Therapy Oncology Academy or section website, and they can kind of see if they can find somebody near them who specializes in oncology rehab. So that's kind of our national website. And there's a find a PT option on there. So people can look anywhere in the US to try to find somebody close to them. And it can be really impactful to have a clinician that you work with who understands all of these different things about cancer treatment and understands what it is that is going on for the patient. Because not everybody specializes in oncology, and similar to in medicine with physicians, not all physicians practice oncology care. So we want to try to have patients working with people who understand cancer and cancer treatment, as well as the side effects that patients have. So it makes sense to try to go to an oncology physical therapist or oncology rehab professional to have them work with you so that they understand what are the things that are going on with you and kind of asking questions as well that are important to know related to your treatment history for cancer as well.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we are so blessed here at the center. We're not going to make you Google, but we do have an oncology massage therapist that could be part of your care team along with your physical therapist to help you on your journey to get back your feelings.
That's right. So here's what I want to do for a second. I want to pull back a little bit. You know, we were talking about the specificity and the specifics that a PT and OT can help with and whatnot. And I'm holding in my hand, as our listeners can hear, our monthly calendar. And this is for our local folks listening to our episode. And I'm gonna just hit a few highlights, Pam, with some of the classes that we offer. And you know, Dr. Weber, I want you to kind of give us a quick little like, yeah, that's great. Oh, that would be good to do. You ought to be going to this class, right? I think this is not, I'm not going to stump you, I can promise. How about water exercise?
That could be helpful. I think as long as somebody is doing all right, moving around, if they're not having balance issues, it could be helpful.
Yeah. What about chair yoga? Seated in a chair.
Yeah, that for our folks who might be having balance issues, that would be an excellent thing to do, especially if they're having an instructor guide them and able to give them some modifications for things. That sounds great.
Yeah. So now I'm going to bundle two classes together because you've already touched on this, and I already know the answer to this, but we have a regaining your balance class and a regaining your strength class.
Those also sound really great and helpful.
This is fun, Pam. So far, I'm batting 1,000. I am perfect. What about walking group? If someone is doing okay and they get out and do a little bit of walking.
Yeah. And even if they were having a little bit of issues, again, it would be helpful if they saw maybe a PT who might tell them help give them something to walk a little bit better. So something else we'll work on with patients is if they need maybe a cane or a walker or something like that, so that they can do stuff like that still, because we do want patients to be active still. It's just figuring out what's the safest way, and having a unique evaluation with a physical therapist can help you determine what's the best thing for you.
Brian, how often do we see people come in here with a cane or a walker or in a wheelchair, and as they slowly, you know, get involved and start going to classes, going to physical therapy, how many people ditch those assisted devices, and we're so happy for them?
I know. You know, we say often, we see life change here happen at the Survivorship Center. I know you do as well at your clinic. There is a lot of truth so much truth to just being active at whatever level they can do. It builds on itself and makes such a strong difference.
It does. There are extensive benefits of physical activity and exercise for all humans, but especially also for people who are living with and beyond cancer. And just like you're saying, whenever we see patients, we kind of start where they're at and kind of build on those activity levels and try to keep on encouraging movement to help get them stronger and feeling better.
You know, you mentioned something and it made me think about it. You talked about how maybe they need like an assisted device, like a cane. And I would assume a lot of that is for balance. Would that be a safe assessment?
Yeah. So sometimes we will help patients have improved balance or just mobility, kind of getting around in general, by using a cane or a walker or something like that. But they can also be helpful tools for energy conservation for people. I talk to patients a lot about that when they're going through active treatment, and sometimes they have those up and down energy levels where they might benefit from using something in the couple of days maybe after their infusion. It depends always on the unique person, but it can help with balance, keeping people moving a little bit longer and safer, helping reduce that fall risk too for patients. So there definitely can be lots of reasons that we would try to use an assistive device with somebody. But for sure, things like improving their energy level to allow them to still be moving, but safely, and they can get to where they need to. A lot of times when people are going to treatment, they might have to park further away and then walk all the way in. So it can be a helpful tool to have a cane or a walker sometimes, depending on what's going on with a unique person, but to help them safely get into their appointments and then again back out from their appointments and help kind of keep those energy levels reserved if they can, so they can enjoy other activities too. It's kind of what I explain to patients sometimes. And then there's also the option, like you said, sometimes people can graduate from using an assistive device if they're getting stronger and they're more steady on their feet.
Yeah. Hey, listen, here's the bottom line, folks. Do not just sit back and let it just happen and just continue to get worse. I think, you know, we say all the time, Pam, we say you are your best advocate. You need to advocate for yourself. You know, that your doctor, your nurse may ask you, how are you doing? That is a perfect time to say, I am suffering with this. Be your own advocate and speak up and ask questions, because it's important. Just as you said, Dr. Weber, that it potentially could just continue to get progressively worse and need to kind of do some things to help mitigate that.
Yeah, definitely. That's the other thing, is helping people and patients understand that they can request those referrals to rehab services or even to massage therapy too, if that's an available option, and asking what are some different things that I can try to do to help myself with these things. And I try to encourage patients that too all the time. And I'm sure you all have experienced this. I feel like a lot of times patients often feel like, well, I just want to get through my treatment. And sometimes patients almost describe like this, they don't say it this way, but almost like this sense of guilt, like, I'm being treated and my life is being saved. I shouldn't complain about anything. I'm like, it's not complaining. This matters. It all matters. And you need to tell your providers so that they can help guide you to different solutions and different things to relieve your discomfort. You're a human being, and we want to make sure that we are able to still address that and help you walk out to your car, help you spend time with your family, help you get back to the different activities that are important to you too. So I try also to do that. And I'm sure you have had similar conversations where patients kind of have this, they don't describe it that way, but this like sense of guilt almost.
Absolutely. And
it's an interesting conversation to have, because it's like, it matters though. It matters all how you feel. So please share.
You know, oftentimes I tell them, you know, it is your quality of life that's important too. You know, if this is affecting your everyday living, you need to talk to someone. You need to bring it up to your healthcare provider. There is help, but we can't help you if you don't tell us. And so, you know, talk to your physicians. You know, we talked a lot about chemotherapy induced neuropathy. Is there such thing as radiation neuropathy?
So yeah, there can also be some neuropathy or some kind of change in those nerve sensations as well from radiation. We know that from radiation therapy, we can have issues with healing for tissue for patients. Sometimes patients will have radiation, say if it was breast cancer, they'll have like the changing in the skin color. We know below the skin, we can have damage to the blood vessels and the nerves in those area. And then sometimes even patients might have changes either from the tissue or where the tumor was, that the nerves potentially could get pressed on in that area too and cause some changes in their sensation, their strength, their ability to move part of their body as well. So we can definitely see some of that from radiation as well. It might just look a little different than chemotherapy neuropathy, because chemotherapy neuropathy, we often see from the fingertips, kind of more of that glove on the hand, on the palm side of the hand, and sometimes on the back of the hand. And then also on the feet, we see it more like a stocking or sock, where it's from the tips of the toes and then kind of goes up the bottom of the foot, and could potentially go up into the legs. That's the more classic chemo neuropathy presentation, whereas radiation, it would depend on the physical location on the body where the radiation was, and is going to look a little different. Whereas chemotherapy neuropathy is more symmetrical on both sides for the most part, and can look a little different as well.
So is there anything that we have missed? Any new latest, greatest information about neuropathy?
I would say some of what I just learned from this most recent education session that I went to, and I'm super thankful for the therapist that taught that session again, is working on some relaxation techniques, including some deep breathing. So working on improving the deep breathing, working on engaging our diaphragm, our big breathing muscle, that can also help kind of calm the body and help to work on improving even some of our like posture a little bit. Because our posture also impacts our balance, and we can use postural adjustments to also react to balance challenges. So that was a big thing she talked a little bit about, with trying to incorporate that more into sessions too. And a lot of times too, there's a ton of benefits as well for diaphragmatic breathing, or that deep breathing where we really engage our big diaphragm breathing muscle, where that can also impact in a good way, like our mental and emotional state, to kind of calm down things there, but it also just calms the whole nervous system and the body as well, and can really help things too. So that was the newer part that she added. But I think also the other thing that I would echo from what I learned from, her name is Katie Schmidt. She's a PT in South Carolina who does oncology rehab. She also talked about, again, trying to work with a rehab clinician so that they can create a program specific to you and your goals, and also for your neuropathy, for your specific neuropathy. So it's really helpful to have somebody to guide you and help show you different things. And the one technique that I do that I learned from her is like a hands-on manual therapy technique that we do. I perform it a lot for people's feet with their neuropathy. So on the bottom of the foot, we can also do it on the hands. And that's something we can then teach to patients as well. And patients can have some good improvement with that. And that it takes repetition is the other thing. It takes lots of reps to work on that, because our nerves are one of our slower healing tissues in the body. But that it can have an impact.
For hey, sure. Ryan. Can you check the calendar for Monday? Do we have anything that fits that?
Yeah.
Some deep breathing.
Yeah. It's our, on Mondays is our chillaxation class and our Tai Chi class. You know, we have the deep breathing of, especially chillaxation, right, Pam?
You know, every time they have the class, they always do this deep belly laugh, and you can't help but to laugh with them. So I am sure that works on the breathing.
Yes. And, you know, the other thing is in Tai Chi, they talk a lot about breathing, deep breaths, as you said, the diaphragm and so forth. So, gosh, there's so much that can be done. And some that you need to ask your provider to be referred over to be seen. One last question, and I think I know the answer to this, but for the most part, insurances and, you know, Medicare covers physical therapy, correct?
Yeah, yeah. Rehab services, PT, OT, and speech therapy. Those are all things that if patients get a referral from their provider and they go somewhere that's in network for them, there is coverage a lot of the time for patients to see someone from our rehab team. So definitely that's an insurance benefit for lots of people.
Yeah. I just wanted to make that little point because I know many times, you know, everything that we provide here at our center, and this sounds like a really shameless plug, but it really is not. We provide everything for free. And I know a lot of times that is a big concern is cost. But I just wanted to make sure that I was correct in assuming that insurances, for the most part, have some sort of coverage for physical therapy, you know, your rehab, your oncology rehab, and especially Medicare, I'm sure does as well. So that leads to saying definitely talk to your doctor.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
There is hope out there. So, you know, just communicate that with your physician. That brings us to our last segment. We are sponsored by the Auto Inc. family. Do you have an Auto Inc. inspiring story that you would like to share with our listeners?
Yeah. So specific to working on neuropathy with a patient, I saw somebody for a handful of sessions and she would park her car a little bit a ways. And initially when she first started coming to me, she would have to stop on her walk because the neuropathy was bothering her so much. And then towards the end of our time together, she was improving. She wasn't having to stop at all. She was going to the gym and walking on the treadmill and feeling a lot better in that kind of numbness, burning feeling she was having in her feet. So that improved a lot. And the other thing was that she was so happy with her progress that she told her support group that she had about working on her neuropathy. And then the facilitator of that group actually asked me to come talk to their group because of the patient's experience. So again, kind of another reason to have patients advocate for themselves, but advocate for others, helping people understand, hey, this is a service that I benefited from. I had physical therapy and I worked on stuff and did stuff with my therapist and I had improvement. And you guys, I want to tell you about it. You can have improvement too. So it's awesome when we have patient stories like that where patients go and tell other people and more people come through to try to have an impact as well on their symptoms and how they're feeling and improving their quality of life.
You know, no survivor should feel guilty for the side effects that they're experiencing. And so, you know, help your fellow survivors out. Share this podcast. You let them know that we're here to help them out. Advocate for yourself at your physician's office. And just know that there is help.
Yeah, without question, Pam. It's important. We've talked about it in this episode several times, quality of life, quality of life, quality of life. You know, you want to be able to walk across the soccer field to watch your grandkids play. You want to be able to climb the stairs. You want to be able to do all these things. It is about quality. So advocate for yourself and come see us. If you live in the Texas Panhandle, especially if you live in the Amarillo area, come see us, come visit us. We have a brand new facility at 1732 Hagee Boulevard, H-A-G-Y, 1732 Hagee Boulevard. Come see us. Check it out. We have an amazing gym. Olivia, our gym manager and personal trainer over there, would love to visit with you and show you all the pieces and parts in there, including treadmills. You know, we have four treadmills in there. Absolutely perfect to help with your neuropathy. So, Dr. Weber, thank you for joining us. I appreciate you sharing your knowledge. And bringing new stuff to us and for what you do there in Indianapolis. And as Pam, as she said, advocating for others, as you said, share this podcast, share it with folks and come visit us. Right, Pam?
That's right.
It's super easy. Thank you again, Dr. Weber. We appreciate
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much. And I'm so happy that your program exists and your center exists as well for patients to come and have a place to go care for themselves.
We do too. Thank you for that. You guys, thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing this. And then make sure to join us next time for another great episode of Beyond the Ribbon.